I want to get your thoughts because you work on a lot of the mental game, and it's a lot about preparation, right, Nick?
100%. I think preparation is one of the biggest keys for athletes to really excel in that competitive performance, in that competitive venue.
One of the stories that didn't get a lot of play, and I know you and I have been trying to connect since the Olympics, was the men's bobsled fours. And everybody saw the crash, and everyone's like, man, you don't normally see crashes like that because they came into the corner turning left, and it was almost like they went right. Like, that was a brutal crash. But people don't know that the day before, they basically changed the drivers from sled one to two and basically switched them now with different groups. What possible decision? Why would you believe that's right? Because these guys, they train together, they know each other's habits, and now you're going to do that right before. How do you think that impacted the psyche?
I mean, I'm not privy to the maybe if there's an injury or whatever, but from a mental perspective, I think making that last minute change is disastrous for an athlete, whether regardless of what the sport may be. You've essentially had an entire training season where we're focused on these are the guys that we're going forward with. This is the plan that we have. This is the plan that they've been visualizing, rehearsing, practicing for how many months, weeks, and years, and on the essentially 24 to 48 hours before we're set to compete, we're changing that exact routine and putting a whole new factor into this. And that's for an athlete that can be devastating to their confidence first and foremost. It creates stress, it creates anxiety for athletes. Spring the one of the other the drivers that was one of the affected drivers, he's quoted in the newspaper saying he just sat there crying. Having this effect. I mean, I'm sorry, you can't tell me that when an athlete is sitting there crying the day before the competition, that that's not going to affect them, going forward. Whether there's the next day or 2 days later, there's time to regroup, it's still going to be affected. And we've talked before, if it was the national hockey team and they've been changing the top line night before the gold medal match, the streets would be on fire in this country.
Yeah, if you went in and said, okay, Sidney Crosby, you're going to now play right wing on their third line.
Yeah.
That's essentially what it would be like. And it's preposterous, and I was surprised that there wasn't a lot more. And I've been reading online, I know in the people that follow bobsled, there's been a lot of questions about it, and it just because it's not our big national sport, but it's really a case of where you overthink things, and you have a coach who clearly doesn't have a grasp on the psyche of his athletes.
Yeah, I mean, I think, or the coach is desperate to make a change, and sometimes, we can have these one-offs where I can remember when I was an athlete having competitions where, my plane arrived late and I got an hour of sleep before the competition and had one of the best performances of my season. But that is so few and far between, and you're really, that's that whole idea of catching lightning in a bottle. And really, to actually try and create that lightning in a bottle, it's usually more fluke and chance that leads to that rather than actually building and creating that type of thing. And so we know from research, countless research studies and countless work with athletes that routine and consistency is so important. If we're not training consistent, we're not going to perform consistent. If we're changing factors, whatever they might be, even if bobsled is one of those sports where there's so many the skill is very transferable to other sleds, for example. But even then, you're still changing that there's still a factor that is changing. And athletes, everybody thinks that athletes, they know they're creatures of habit. And we like certain things certain ways. And in some ways, it becomes problematic. And we have to follow rituals that then end up becoming a little bit of a distraction. But that's where a situation like this, if there's those athletes might feel like they are their good luck charms that driver, and all of a sudden we change that. Now all of a sudden a little more jitters. Maybe we're not pushing the sled the same way. Maybe the speed's changing. Who knows? There's so many factors that get affected by just changing this one thing. And we might say, oh, it's one small thing. It's just changing the entire team over. But really, it's not. Yes, they're pushing the sled, but they're still an integral part of that team.
And I look at it as Nick Allen from River Valley Health, a sports psychologist, joins us. You look at that sport where in bobsled, it's all about speed. And you kind of get in, but you know the track, right? It's not like suddenly you could have another bobsled come in and hit you, right? Like in hockey, your athletes, you have to train them to learn to adapt to unexpected situations. Whereas in bobsled, I don't think you do. I think it's a mental focus on, okay, if you're the number four pusher, you know exactly what you have to do in a straight line for 4 seconds. You're in the car, and then away you go.
Yeah.
Like, there's less distractions. So to me, it was even more ridiculous to do it to those athletes who likely maybe aren't as well trained in it, whereas NHL players in that sport, you have to be able to just quickly change. All of a sudden, your first-line center is hurt. Well, I got to move up the lineup. I have no choice, and that happens all the time.
Exactly, and it's a different skill set, right, that ends up happening and for different sports. I mean, we wouldn't go to a golfer and say, you know, before their shot on the last shot on the 18th green when the score is tied, to say, you know what, you're going to change your pre-shot routine right before you make your last birdie putt to win the tournament. No one would think to do that. That would sound preposterous, like you mentioned earlier. And I think the same thing happens in these skill sports or sports where it's repetition, like golf, like diving, bobsled to some extent, right? They know their line they're trying to go, and for the pushers, they're pushing, they're using those same muscle firing patterns all the time. They're not changing on the fly like a hockey player or a quarterback or anything like that, and so it's a different skill set that those athletes change. And for athletes to get into those types of focused states, if we try and change that can really have negative impacts on their performance. Now, I mean, again, sometimes there are certain factors that an injury happens or, you know, we're trying to have a better performance and maybe we try and make these changes to increase that performance, and it's a gamble. I mean, when we're picking lines for a hockey tournament and making a team to go to the Olympics for Team Canada Hockey, you know, how many discussions have there been about what players were selected for the teams? And, you know, we won, and sort of now that discussion is gone. Had we lost, you probably would still be having conversations on your show about the team that was selected and who was selected. And so it's so important to have that. And even though athletes need to be able to adapt, that routine is so important. And for a lot of athletes, we mentioned rituals earlier. You know, it's really can become a huge distraction for athletes when they get a ritual, say like a lucky charm or lucky socks or a lucky gear or something like that, a lucky charm they have to do. Nadal is famous. If you watch Nadal playing before games, he has rituals left, right, and center. He doesn't cross the lines except for a certain foot, so he'll stutter step to make sure his foot's match. His water bottles have to be in exactly the right position. There's all these things that start getting added up. And the problem with that is if everything goes according to plan, yeah, he's in that zone right before a sport. But if something else happens, all of a sudden, it's problematic. I was speaking with an athlete earlier this week, and when they get out of bed, if they put the wrong foot down, they think they're going to have a bad performance because they in their head, their superstition, their ritual is, I got to touch the ground with my right foot first, and if I don't, I'm screwed. And it's so they haven't even started warming up for a competition, and you're already. You know, you're already putting yourself behind the eight ball. I can remember being an athlete, when I was competing in fencing, and I can remember sitting before a national championships and waking up in the morning. I'd ripped my lucky socks the day before, and so I couldn't wear them anymore. And I sat in my bed in the morning pulling on my socks, and I sat and thinking to myself, I'm not going to have a good day because I don't have my lucky socks. And so I screwed myself before I'd even got into the competition. So hence why I went into sports psychology, so I could use these skills to make me more effective. And I use these stories with my athletes and to remind them this is such a – superstitions and good luck charms are such a distraction that it's the routine is different for everybody, but you need to find what's consistent for you and stick with it. You know, the consistency is so important.
Did you lose when you didn't have your lucky socks?
I had fenced.
You had lost before you got in.
I had lost before I even got into the competition. I had been fencing amazing the entire week before, and you know, because I had my lucky socks. And the day that I ripped my lucky socks, the next day I think I was, you know, the goal was to try and make a medal, and I think I finished like 15th or something like that. I was like one of my worst performances of the season. And
why was there so much? Like, where did you get to the point where you felt like these lucky socks were that important to you?
You know,
like, how did? Because I've never been a superstitious person about anything.
Yeah.
How do some athletes? Why do they? Have you done a study on why do athletes gravitate towards a superstition? What's the reason?
A lot of it just becomes it's kind of like general. Pavlovian learning, right, where they have a good tournament and they just start to associate these things with, well, when I woke up that day, I put I had these socks and I happened to wear them the next day because I just, for whatever reason, and they had a good day again, and now all of a sudden they've associated having a great performance with this item. Hockey's, you know, notorious for it with the lucky stick and all these types of things. And it's it can be very the problem with superstitions is they're so insidious and they start to build and build and build and they can become cultural for the sport as well. Look at hockey, you know, NHL playoffs. We'll see it very shortly here that the big question is, are they going to touch that Eastern and Western Conference trophy or are they just going to stand beside it? And realistically, by letting that thought and that luck make that decision, we are giving up control of our performances. We are saying, whether we win in a Stanley Cup, whether we win or lose, is going to be purely based whether or not I touch a trophy or not. Not based on how I play, not based on how I prepare, not based on the skill of our team, but purely based on if I touch a trophy or not. It's ridiculous when we look at it from that perspective. And yet, from a and physically, technically, tactically, that has no impact on how we play, but it has such a huge impact on our brain. And it's this idea that we think, you know, it's these athletes, when we don't incorporate mental skills into our training, we use superstitions to help build our confidence, to give us reasons why we are successful, really rather than just having this internal focus, this internal locus of control, and saying we are the ones that actually dictated that performance. It was our great performance that actually led us to being successful, not this good luck charm, not this luck that we had. And so I think for athletes, it's very important that they after a tournament, they really say, what really helped me to be successful? It wasn't your gear. It wasn't your I had a good draw. No, it was the good performance that you had. It was putting all those pieces together and really doing what you could to make sure that you were successful.
Nick Allen, a sports psychologist from River Valley Health, joined us. Dealing with, you know, athletes who are professionals where they have a long season and then they try to build up for the playoffs compared to the Olympians. Like, I look at the Olympics, and the reason I love it so much is it's like one time in 4 years. And I know there's a world championship every year in your sport, but it's not the same. Like, the pressure, do you notice, like, do you have to deal with Olympians different than you have to deal with NHL players and others?
Yeah, you know, definitely in terms of how when we talk about goal setting, you know, there's a much with hockey guys, it becomes more of a season by season real focus. And okay, well, what's happened this season? Whereas with Olympic sports and even most sports, even like something that has a world championship, but there's usually a longer term type of goal, and so they'll have more of a quadrennial plan. So we have a 4 year plan where there's milestones for each year. I think it might be more a better comparison for an Olympic athlete would be more like with a WHL team, where there is kind of like that 3 to 5 year type of window that they're going for in terms of growing their team. And then, okay, once we get there, we realize all our guys are getting older and we're probably going to have to rotate and switch out through. And that's kind of how we work with Olympic athletes, to say, okay, here's the milestones that we kind of have to meet in year one. Here's how we have to meet in year two. But then there is this different type of pressure because it's 4 years. You've been trained for 4 years, and there it is. It's your, for some sports, it's your one run. That's all you get. You know, there's no other options. And it becomes it's not like it's a term where we have a round robin where, okay, if we lose one, we still have a chance. It's you do this now or you're out. And that is an extreme amount of pressure for athletes. And really, if they're not preparing for that from year one and not thinking about that, not visualizing, not incorporating that pressure into their training from year one, well, when year four rolls around, they're not ready for it.
And the other thing is, you know, in hockey or any of the other sports, you can kind of sometimes feel your way into a game a little bit. If you have a bad first shift, you can come back. You know, if you're in moguls or you're in speed skating, you can't do that. Like, yep. The focus, those athletes have to be maybe more focused. It's a different type of sport. Maybe, and I don't even know if there's such a thing as more focused, but it's just different.
Or a different type of focus.
How does that focus change, and how do you teach those sports athletes different focus compared to NHL players?
Yeah, I think that the fundamentals are very similar. You know, we talk about building confidence, we incorporate visualization, goal setting, all these standardized kind of mental skills. But really, it's about sitting with that athlete and get him to focus on and realize that, you know, the pressure is going to be there, and accept the pressure and embrace it in some ways. That, you know, I have lots of athletes that will come to see me and they want to work on their, you know, I want to be able to handle pressure. I don't want to feel nervous in competition. And the first thing I tell every single one of them is, I'm not going to even try to not make you feel nervous before a competition, because that's normal. You know, we go to a new job interview, we go to a new any kind of new experience, there's always some butterflies, right? And some athletes really like that, and some people don't. And it's learning that just because we have anxiety, whether it be, you know, nerves, good or bad, that doesn't have to negatively affect our performance. You know, it's a natural part of that experience. It's about managing how those nerves or how that energy level is affecting us. So if we're too energized or too stressed for a competition, then we got to learn and control that by incorporating relaxation exercises. You know, in a team sport, well, you know what, I got the team, I'm not too stressed about this, will be a pretty easy competition. Well, maybe we need to increase that intensity so that you are in that same zone, because just as an athlete can become too nervous, there can also be athletes that are understimulated, and that's going to just as negatively affect their performance as being overstimulated. And so it's about finding that balance, that idea of being in the zone. You know, I like to use the idea of a of a stereo. You know, when the volume's just right at a party, everybody's dancing and grooving. But if it's too loud, people are leaving, their ears are hurting. Or if it's too quiet, everybody's kind of bored. So when we find that right zone, when we find that stereo is at just the right spot, then the party really gets going. And that's what athletes have to do. And it's not rocket science. There's no magic pill, just like there's no magic pill when it comes to training. There's no magic pill when it comes to technical training. It's all about hard work and putting the time in. And as long as you practice it, those things are going to be more likely to succeed. And it's sometimes for some athletes, you know, it just doesn't, you might have all the confidence in the world. You might have prepared and not have, you know, be managing the nerves just as much as you need to. But when it comes down to it, something just doesn't quite happened in that actual performance. And that's normal for athletes to have that. And it's really about teaching athletes that, okay, just because you don't reach your goal doesn't mean that your life is over, that there are other things besides sports. And that's also really hard for some athletes when we go to retire or something like that, is because their whole identity is surrounded around sport and they have nothing else to do that. And that's a real challenge. That's a whole nother discussion for another day. But when that whole idea, again, it just falls into that routine. That's why having you know a year of consistently training with his team and then changing it the day essentially before the competition, you have put that athlete in a very difficult position to perform consistently well, because it's completely new. It's not what they've been training for.
A few people wonder, how do you get into sports psych? What do you got to do?
Yeah, so for myself, I did my phys ed degree at the U of A. And then my major was in sports performance and sports psychology. And then after that, I did a master's in counseling. And then you can do a master's in sports psychology. You can do a master's in general counseling with a sports focus. And then you can also do PhDs in general counseling or in psychology of some field, or in specifically in sports psychology. So usually there's an undergrad and then a master's degree at a minimum to get into sports psychology. And then either a PhD, depending on where you're working, what you want to do with athletes, then moving on to a PhD as well.
Anything that you'd like to do moving forward in sports psych that you haven't already?
You know, I've worked with so many different sports, and so there's not a real new sport that I would really like to work with. I think, that's a great question. I don't really think there is. You know, it's just continuing to do. I love my job so much. There's nothing really that I feel like I'm not getting in my job. And so that's the fantastic thing about it, is that there's always variety. It's always something new. And I get to work with amazing athletes all the time. And I mean, being a former athlete, how much fun is that? You know, I think, working with one of my athletes to actually win a gold medal at the Olympics, that would probably be, you know, that would be awesome. But I can only help them get there. I'm not winning the gold medal for them. So I don't need that to reward my career. I think just when athletes come in, they go, I did so well at the competition because you helped me out. That's all I need. That makes the biggest difference.